Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the crazy maelstrom of insanity of today.
What happened? Did anything happen insane today?
Yeah, we have somebody who has won a Pro Tour and made the finals of a Pro Tour on the show since. We talked to him last on the show again. That's what happened today. What's up, Jerry Thompson? Welcome to the show.
Yo, what's going on? Also, I think me being on the show is like kind of tame compared to everything else that's going on though.
Yeah.
I think the best thing I've seen is Saffron Oliver shared on Facebook a picture of Rita Repulsa from Animorphs coming out of the space, not Animorphs, Power Rangers coming out of the space dumpster.
Yeah.
And he was like, and Jace returns. And then someone was like, what about Blood Red Elf? And he's like, and it came with Zordon. So we have a lot of classic, you know, the original, they were the original kind of, not the original, but they brawled it out in standard. And one kept one in check. And now that they're both back together, we're going to see what happens.
We are all dorks. So welcome back to the show. We're really excited to have you. Jace, Bloodbraid, Unbanned. You were in an insane finals of an awesome Pro Tour. And it's been awesome to watch your career since last year on the show. So let's get through a couple shout outs and then talk to Jerry T about all of the craziness that's going on in Magic right now.
Well, let's start. Jerry T, where can people find you?
I am on Twitter a lot, and I basically try to reply to anyone who asks me a reasonable question, and that's at G3RRYT. And I also have a podcast called The Game Podcast, GAM. And yeah, that's about it.
Super duper cool.
All right. And you can find us on Twitter at the MMCast. I'm at Kess Wiley.
You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
We also have a Facebook group. You should check that out. There's like almost 4,000 members now. It is extraordinarily active. We just we're bringing on a few more moderators because we just are growing faster than we thought we would be growing. And it's great. It's probably one of the better places to discuss Modern on the internet.
Yes, it's crazy. It's so full of conversation, and you know, the sky is falling today, as it often is.
Yeah, it's fun. Every time the sky is falling, you can really have a good understanding of why, because of that group.
Yes.
You also have our Patreon. It is how we fund the things that we do, from the mics we're talking on to the memory cards we use to record to the wires that are allowing us to plug in our little new machine to my computer so Jerry could talk to us. And
lastly, we have a station on Anchor called 10 Minutes of Modern, anchor.fm. It's like Twitter meets podcasting, short form audio. We talk every single day for about 10 minutes about all of the magic going on. I have not talked yet today about Jace because I wanted to save all my energy for this podcast. So without further ado, I say we get straight into things. Did you know anything, like last night late, did you have any inkling this was happening, Jerry, or did you wake up, see it at 8 a.m. just like all the rest of us and we're blown away?
I kind of just assumed that following the Pro Tour, nothing was going to happen. So I like woke up at 6 or something this morning. And then even by like 9:30, I hadn't really like checked the internet or anything. And I was staying at a friend's house and he woke up and told me. And I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah, it's totally, what a crazy, crazy day. Alex posted something on our Twitter last night that was like, likelihood that Jace the Mind Sculptor is unbanned.
Because it's a little bit of me eating my hat, though I did keep, Jace did have a chance. I did not totally give up on him.
I think you said 40% likelihood that Bloodbraid was unbanned.
I think, yeah, there's a 40% chance nothing is unbanned. Because as Jace said, the chances of just it being a, you know what, the format is healthy right now, let's not change anything. I do want to get in a little bit later on why I think that's a little bit of a misconception, but there's a 40% chance nothing is unbanned. 40% chance that Bloodbraid Elf was unbanned. It's the one that every single person on the planet was like, just you can unban this card. It shouldn't have been banned in the first place. That was Deathrite Shaman's fault. Yep. Took a bullet for someone else. A 19.9998% chance that Stoneforge Mystic is unbanned. That's the card that a lot of people were talking about would have been fair to unban and was something that would maybe be exciting to see. And a 0.0002% chance that Jace the Mind Sculptor was unbanned. But there's a chance, and it happened.
Yeah, I we had Patrick Chapin on a couple times, and I remember the first time he was ever on, we had a pretty lengthy discussion about Jace and would it ever see an unbanning in Modern. And I remember him just saying, like, this is very likely the most powerful card that it would be available in Modern, period. It's like he was just sort of like, people don't really remember or realize until they start playing with it quite how oppressive of a card it can be. And that's been my opinion the whole time because, you know, he's very smart.
Well, yeah, Patrick and Corey, we've had conversations with both of them, and both of them are relatively infamous for playing at least Grixis as a color combination.
They love
and
blue.
Jace, they were both like, Jace, if that card is unbanned, I'm going to show everyone why it should be banned.
So, yeah, I mean, we believe those guys are obviously very good players. And the question we have is Jace sort of the pound for pound best card in Modern? Like, do you think that's the case?
I mean, if you're talking about Modern right now, I think that's possible, but you also have to take into consideration, like, Jace in a vacuum is, like, not going to beat, like, you know, Rite of Flame and Hypergenesis and stuff like that, right? Like, that's just crazy. And Modern right now still has, like, a very high power level, and the, like, what it takes for a 4-mana card to get into Modern, it has to be insane, right? And Jace is very, very good, but there are also just, like, a lot of incidental ways to beat it. So I don't think that that's necessarily true.
Yeah, if you look at, like, the 14 decks that did well at the Pro Tour and the GP, different 14 different decks that top-8ed, most of them are good against Jace. Like, there's a few that aren't, but for the most part, they all either are good against them or have answers to them or at least have parity against him. So you have a format that is already relatively fine with Jace existing, and obviously it's going to be warping the format. It's going to give decks that were already good maybe some power boosts, but I think in the long run you're going to see it kind of just be safe.
So okay, like let's talk a little bit about the blue decks, the ones that actually will probably play Jace. So you have, you know, blue white control, you've got Jeskai Tempo and Jeskai control, you've got Grixis control, and then maybe some other sort of fringe decks. Those are like the really good blue based decks that we see a lot of, maybe Blue Moon as well. Do we think that Jace slots in as like a minimum three of in all of those decks? Is he just an autoplay?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, one of the things that a lot of the blue decks you mentioned have been looking for is like this midway or mid-range card that kind of like either closes the game very quickly or at least like cements their position. And they don't have a really good way to actually take full control of a game. And I think Jace allows them to do that. And one of the things that I'm most concerned about with Jace is just like the prevalence of cheap spells alongside it. And Grixis Death Shadow does that really, really well. So I don't think it's necessarily like a full control card. Like you mentioned, you might see in like the Blue Moon decks or like the Through the Breach Emrakul decks. But just having Jace as like the top end in your aggressive Death Shadow deck seems like the scariest thing.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I guess when Jace was banned from Standard, it was in a time where, you know, Cobblade was the premier deck, and that was a lot of 2-mana threats with lots and lots of 1-mana spells. So, like, Ponder, Preordain were both legal, Duress, Inquisition, I think Condemn, maybe.
So you're saying that Squadron Hawks is now back to being on the table.
Don't
as
you
a
act
card.
Like you're being coy? I saw you pull your stack of Squadron Hawks this morning. Alex literally pulled.
It's not crazy.
Well, because the thing with Squadron Hawks that's good with Jace is you play Squadron Hawk, draw three random, you know, Squadron Hawk cards, which are mediocre, but then you play Jace and put those Squadron Hawks back in your deck and then get three good cards off of Brainstorm. And then you play another Squadron Hawk and then you draw those two cards and you do that again. So they're really good with Jace.
I mean, people are playing Squadron Hawk in that Monument deck. That deck was sweet.
Jace, right. Monument.
So I think we can all agree Jace is going to make an impact. Last question, just briefly to touch on this idea that Miracles is going to be a deck. I know Riverwise Augur, I've seen that list pop up a little bit. Do we think there's a possibility that Entreat the Angels and Terminus and all these cards are going to really break through, that we're going to see this as a deck in Modern, a premier deck? What do you think, Jerry?
You just have to jump through so many hoops to make Terminus. Like, yeah, you can chase back a Terminus, but for, you know, the 5-mana investment, you could also just play a Supreme Verdict, right? So
Right.
I don't know. Like, obviously you get like the early turn, like, oh, maybe I can spike a Terminus, but I just don't think the enablers are there. Like, the legacy version has things like Brainstorm and Ponder and previously Sensei's Dividing Top, and Modern basically just has none of that. Like, Riverwise Augur is not where you want to be.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Legacy, I wouldn't play Miracles now that top is gone. And it still has Brainstorm and Jace as four ofs each, and Modern doesn't even have Brainstorm. You have the worst of those three cards as a Miracles setup plan available now, which just makes it kind of not as exciting. Or, I mean, maybe Terminus he's played, just because in general Terminus by itself is fine, but I don't see like four Terminus and Treat the Angels decks kind of like making a comeback in Modern.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking offline a little bit, Jerry, and you said that you know, porting decks over is not a smart decision usually. That's often something that doesn't work. Here's a question I have, and this is just a last thought on this before we move on, but you know, with the more cards that get printed and the further kind of we get from the inception of Modern, the closer and closer Legacy and Modern get, right? And so there's only a small number of cards that truly separate the two formats. I think most of us can agree that if you just say dual lands and Force of Will, those two cards probably stand at the top of the two cards.
Brainstorm is above both of those.
Okay, so Brainstorm. So like, I wonder what the top 10 cards separating Modern and Legacy really are. Like, I wonder what that list looks like.
I mean, Deathrite Shaman is another big one.
Huge one, yep.
There's a lot of different combo enablers for Legacy, so like Dark Ritual, Lion's Eye Diamond, stuff like that.
Right.
And
LED being gone is a big one.
LEDs, yeah.
Yeah, like the fact that you're missing Force of Will, I think, is just it's enough of a difference that you can't really compare the two.
Wasteland probably.
Yeah, Wasteland also. It's just like, okay, so yeah, there are some mid range decks that have like cantrips and Tarmogoyfs or cantrips and Young Pyromancer, but it's like that's kind of where the similarities end.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, the playstyle is very different. All right, so
back to Jace. The one other thing I wanted to bring up before we get into Blood Raid Elf is going into, you know, the last big conversation we had on Jace coming on band was around the time Splinter Twin was still legal. And at that time, kind of the conversation was, one of the biggest problems with Jace is it puts people down a distinct, with one card, a distinct plan of either dealing with Jace and losing to whatever they're doing, or dealing with what they're doing and losing to Jace, and Jace stopping them from being able to prevent them doing what they're doing. And one of the reasons, you know, we at one point we were like, oh, it's maybe safe because there's nothing like Splinter Twin, but then, you know, Jerry mentioned it, the Through the Breach Emrakul decks, or the other one that does Platinum Imperium now, either versions of that, is something that now with Jace makes it much scarier to me for this card to be legal, because now those Blue Moon deck can just play Jace. I have to deal with this Jace while they're doing all the good things that Blue Moon did before they had Through the Breach Emrakul, but then at any moment, instant speed Emrakul at the end of my turn and I lose.
You just, those are mouthful. I believe that what you're saying is that Jace will add to good stuff decks, and it will make it difficult to decide how to play against those good stuff decks. Kind of.
Well, I'm pointing at this, like, there's a lot of dangerous things that this card can do, and the biggest thing it does is it forces people to have to deal with it, allowing people to do the thing they want to do too easily.
I agree with you that I think that on paper, this idea that because it's a four drop, it's not going to have as big of an impact as it could. I think it's a little bit naive, because I think the best players have shown us this card is much, much, much better than just a four mana planeswalker that's better than all the other four mana planeswalkers. It's a game defining card, not even format. It's one of the defining cards ever printed in this game. So the possibilities are endless. I'm excited to see what happens, but cautiously optimistic, let's say.
So let's, yeah. Any last things on Jace before we get on the BBE? Jerry?
Jace is definitely going to make an impact. It is definitely going to be very good, possibly frustrating to play against. But I think it is just going to be another card in a sea of good cards.
Yeah. All right.
I can agree with that.
Because we don't have that much time, and I really want to talk to you about the Pro Tour, and Blood Raid Elf's been legal before, give us your one-minute reaction to Blood Raid. I mean, you told us it's a card you've played before, so it's obviously not as exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm way more excited to play with Jace in this format, but Blood Raid has a lot of things going on for it, too. It's awesome with Kolaghan's Command, which we haven't seen before. Yeah. It's very good with Ancestral Vision, which people had tried for a little bit in Legacy, but we hadn't ever had a chance to do that in Modern, so that's another potential build around. And I think Blood Raid, I don't know, it's like it creates extra deck building tension for any sort of creature deck where, like, you know, do you actually want Collected Company or Bloodbraid Elf?
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair. I mean, the four drop slot is crowded in Modern. You can't play that many of them.
It's not that crowded. Like, if you look at Modern, four drops that don't just outright win you the game or aren't at instant speed were not played at the Pro Tour, like, kind of across the board. That's what one of Wizards' big qualifications why they could unban both of these cards was just like, you know, Blood Raid Elf isn't stealing the thunder of any of Jun's top-end decks because Jun's not seeing play, and none of those top-end 4-drops are seeing play alongside of it. And you could say that about every card in the format.
What were the 4-drops in Reed Duke's Abzan list at the Predator?
There wasn't. Were there?
Did he not play any 4?
He had Tyler's Tracker, I think.
Yeah, Tyler's Tracker and Lingering Souls.
Kind of a 4-drop, yeah.
It's a 5/3-drop.
Yeah, that's what you need to fetch with. Yeah, I mean, welcome to Magic. It just gets more and more efficient every year.
Yep.
All right, so let's
well, the one thing I did want to ask is, because the format has been very much defined by Fatal Push over the last year and a half. or exactly a year?
Exactly, about a year. Yeah, we spoiled it a year ago.
But Bloodbraid Elf specifically's relationship to Fatal Push is odd because it's semi not the best card to cascade into because you're not always going to have a target, and B, killing Bloodbraid Elf is it's harder with a Fatal Push than other removal spells. Do we start seeing another push towards more Lightning Bolt heavy removal bases out of Jund now that Bloodbraid Elf is back?
And Jace.
And Jace. Yeah, and Fatal Push is bad against Jace. Well, Lightning Bolt is serviceable.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely going to happen. And then, you know, maybe that brings like a shift towards like more Death Shadows, more Tarmogoyfs and things of that nature. But yeah, Lightning Bolt, I mean, not only is it good against Jace most of the time, but if you are playing Bloodbraid Elf, you're almost certainly playing Lightning Bolt. And if you're playing Jace, you're probably playing Snapcaster Mage, which also means you're probably playing Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, it's really interesting because like the last year we've kind of had a move for your creature should be good against Fatal Push, and instead of the 8 years of Modern that was before that, that's way longer than Modern's existed, but whatever, where Lightning Bolt was the defining removal spell and everything had to be a X4. And I think we're going to be moving back into a land where X4s are important.
Cool. I agree. I think Wall of Omens is a sweet one. I actually think I've just been saying this forever, but I now think that with Jace being back in the format and everything, and you know, Bloodbraid Elf and Wall of Omens is but a card that's been underplayed. I think the Jeskai Saheeli Rey Felidar Guardian deck is going to be a thing. I just want that to be a thing. I don't know how it's not a thing yet. It seems like so obvious to me that should be a thing, but it's not. All right. Anyway, let's move on to the next part of the show.
Well, so yeah, we're going to get into the Pro Tour that you did very well on.
Yeah, congratulations. Since we last talked to you, which I think you were on
a little over a year ago.
After Detroit, I think you top-aided with Eldrazi. You have now won a Pro Tour and also made the finals of another Pro Tour. So congratulations to you, sir.
It's been a good year, guys. I don't know what to tell you.
So before we get into like kind of specific matches from the top eight, can you walk us through a little bit of why you chose Mardu, how you chose it, and kind of the process of why that deck is great?
So I have been very familiar with like these velocity-based like mid-range decks that just have a ton of interaction. I really enjoy playing them, and my preparation for the Pro Tour was sort of light. I just made a list of decks that I thought would be considerations, and I just like slowly crossed things off the list. And the only things that were really remaining were Mardu and Grixis Death Shadow, and Grixis looked pretty bad against humans, and Mattia Rizzi gave me a list. So, you know, it just kind of all came together.
So you really considered playing Grixis, honestly?
I did, yeah.
Have you talked to Corey Burkhart at any length about his decision to consistently do it?
Grixis Death Shadow.
Grixis Shadow. Okay.
Yeah, not control.
Yes, he's the only madman that does that.
Yeah, it would take a lot for me to sleeve up Cryptic Command, honestly.
Yeah, interesting.
What about Bloodbraid Elf? Would that get you to do it?
If my options are Bedlam Reveler, Death Shadow, Jace, or Bloodbraid Elf, I think Bloodbraid Elf is in fourth.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay.
Bedlam Reveler, sweet.
So why don't you walk us through some of the, like, where did Bedlam Reveler come from? You know, Young Pyromancer has classically been considered the fifth two-drop all-star card of Magic, but has kind of not been a big deal in Modern since the Treasure Cruise days. So what, you know, and then this top eight had two different Pyromancer decks. So what kind of brought that back to the forefront and kind of explained the engine of your deck and why it works the way it does?
So Young Pyromancer is very, very strong in Legacy because of things like Ataxian Probe and Cabal Therapy and, to a lesser extent, Force of Will. And for Modern, it's like always been there. Like people have played it in and out of some decks, but like I said before, like they're generally blue decks, and then they need some like mid game big card drawer, or you know, like a thing like Jace to just either keep the engine going or lock up the game. And they just hadn't had that. It was like you'd play Young Pyromancer, kill a few things, get a few tokens, and then you just kind of like run out of gas. And Pascal Viren's deck has Thing in the Ice to go alongside Young Pyromancer, so now you have like up to eight of these two mana threats that you can play. And his deck also had Ancestral Vision, which these blue decks haven't had for a very long time. And as far as Mardu, Bedlam Reveler got printed. People figured out that Faithless Looting was really good alongside Bedlam Reveler, and now these black red based decks like get to play a low land count, some cantrips, and they have multiple things that are telling them to just cast instants and sorceries. So it just kind of all came together.
Do you think that the sort of improvement in quality of the card has anything to do with the printing of like Fatal Push and Opt over the course of the last year? Or do you think it's more definitely of a meta thing?
Certainly the more one mana cards that pair with it, like the slightly better it gets. And Fatal Push complements Lightning Bolt really well. Like if you only had Lightning Bolt and say like you only had Inquisition or only had Thoughtseize and then like the rest of your stuff was two mana, like Young Pyromancer would probably not be very good. It is because you have a very, very high density of one mana cards for sure.
Does it surprise you to know the most top or the most played removal spell in the top eight was Collective Brutality?
Kind of, I guess, but it sort of makes sense. I mean, the decks that play Push Bolt or Lightning Bolt or Push Lightning Bolt or Path to Exile generally are two of those colors, so they have to pick between one or the other, and black was just very popular, and Brutality is not only just like a very good removal spell, but it's like very potent against burn, so it often ends up in the sideboard a lot. It's one of those like bridge cards that you can use to bring in a lot of different matchups, and it's also just an enabler for stupid graveyard stuff, which Modern happens to have a lot of.
Yes,
so,
it does.
So yeah, so when we went over each of the decks from the top eight during the Pro Tour when we did our episode last week, we went over your list and we were talking about Collective Brutality, and you know, we were wondering, Collective Brutality feels like it works so well with all of the other things you're doing in your deck. Why did you choose not to go as just a straight four of and lower the amount of copies in the deck?
Part of the problem is that you need your removal spells to be able to go above -2/-2. Like, you need some amount of Terminates for big Eldrazi and Tarmogoyfs and stuff. You want some amount of one-mana interaction for, like, the Champion of the Parishes of the World. So, I don't know. Like, Brutality, if it were better against more of the creatures in the format that you want to kill, I think you would see more copies. And, like, even some of the lists are going up to three, you know?
Costing two is probably a problem, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, there's, like, one-mana cards are great. You kind of just play all the ones that you can, and then the two mana cards, like, you have to actually make decisions as far as like which ones you want to play and how many.
Interesting. All right, so let's talk then a little bit about the actual matchups that you found yourself in. So you had two incredible, very, very interactive matches, and then unfortunately a finals against what you said in your article was your worst matchup against Lantern. You start out against Five Color Humans, which you correctly predicted is one of the top decks. Is that's favored for you, right? Because you have so much removal?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the games can get kind of close because they have a lot of threats in their deck, and they certainly have more threats than you have removal, but as long as you're able to get your engine going, like Faithless Looting Bedlam Reveler, you should be able to stay on top of things, and barring that, you can also just find yourself in a racing situation where you have Young Pyromancer and some tokens, either elementals or spirits from Lingering Souls, and maybe you just kill them that way.
Did you ever consider playing Smuggler's Copter? I always feel like that card plays so well with Lingering Souls and like Pyromancer tokens. I'm such a fan of it.
Yeah, I could probably see that. I was playing with Copter in a few different decks, like Eldrazi and Taxes.
Yep. So in that matchup, am I correct in thinking then that there is some potency to your flyers because of Mantis Rider and you kind of get into that racing situation sometimes, or you just hope to kill it? You don't really care so much about your souls.
Yeah, I mean, Lingering Souls, it depends on the game state whether or not you're using them to trade or race or just chump block and buy you time. And a lot of the games against humans came down to me having a Lingering Souls to flashback to insulate myself against them top decking a Mantis Rider to kill me. So having the blockers definitely matters. And it's more of just like a card that's a part of your engine with like Faithless thing.
What card in that matchup do you fear the most?
I mean, like Meddling Mage has so many cards that it wants to name, but there were games where it's like they would name Lightning Bolt and I'd have two, or they'd name something like Thoughtseize or Collective Brutality to protect their collected company from the company versions and stuff. But Phantasmal Image is probably the one that is the scariest because you basically need a Bedlam Reveler to stabilize against them, and then it gives them a shot to just like come right back over the top of you.
Yeah, copying Reveler with Image is insane. It's like it was one of the most fun things to watch at the Pro Tour, actually. All right, so that's your first matchup. So you get through that, and at this point, you go up against the other Pyromancer deck. Now, this is pretty fascinating, and this had to have been the big... The reverse sweep, obviously, because you end up playing against Lantern in the finals, is the most triumphant moment of your weekend, I'm assuming. Talk us through a little bit what it's like being down two games. Like, when you're sitting there and you're thinking about you have to win three in a row in an incredibly interactive matchup, especially with the emotional weekend you had, what's going on in your head?
I just try not to think about it. I'm, like, there doing my thing, taking it one game at a time, and whatever happens, happens. Like, Pro Tour success is still kind of, like, eluded me to some degree, you know, to the point where, like, I'm not going to take anything for granted. So, like, if I'm sitting down to play my top four match in a Pro Tour, like, I'm just thankful that I'm there already.
Right, right. Now, you named your article that you wrote Winning for Corey, and you've talked about it a little bit already. Did that enter your mind? Were you thinking about him during those matches at all, or was it you were totally, totally zeroed in on the game and it just everything else kind of faded out?
Yeah, I think I'm generally pretty good at just, like, focusing at the task at hand, but, like, certainly in between rounds, like, you know, I'm going outside, kind of, like, collecting myself, and I'm scrolling through, like, Facebook and Twitter and stuff, and, I mean, Corey had touched, like, a lot of people's lives and everything, and people just had, like, nothing but nice things to say about him, so it was just, like, I would read those things, think about him, kind of get fired up, just, like, accidentally, and then just, like, go back in and beat up on some people.
Yeah, I get that. So now in that fifth match against Blue Red, he resolves or he suspends Ancestral Vision. That's got to be the most frightening thing that deck can do against you, right? Is the turn one Ancestral?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since he was on the play. But I don't know. Like he cracked a fetch and said, "I have the good one," which meant Ancestral instead of like Serum Visions or whatever. And I just looked at my hand, and my hand was very good, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun game. And that was basically, like, all I was concerned about, you know? Like, the whole, like, being in top four of a Pro Tour thing, like, it just becomes a free roll for me. Like, I don't, like, need to necessarily win the tournament or whatever. I just want to do my best and occasionally put on a show and make it entertaining for everyone else. And I think I did a pretty good job of doing that and just also happened to win. But, yeah, like... His Ancestral against, like, my looting into Lingering Souls, like, that's actually a fair fight.
Right, right, right. So talk to me just for a second about, I mean, you're historically a brewer. You're somebody who's talked a lot about brewing with wacky cards, and I've read a lot of your articles because I feel I'm the same way. You just, you know, win Pro Tours, and I don't. So if there was a Pro Tour you could win with any card of your choice in Magic's history, any card at all, what would that card be?
I don't know. Like this seems like a different question than like, what are your favorite cards? Because I certainly have a list of favorite cards.
Yeah, like I don't know. Like for me, like Joyer of the Gitu or something, or like Grand Architect would be like probably be like high on my list of cards. I love those cards, and the idea of winning with them seems outrageous. You don't have one like that?
Probably Exile into Darkness.
Exile into Darkness. Deep cut. Is that the? It's got that weird face on it, right? Am I making that up?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm like trying to think what that card actually does.
It is 4B sorcery. Target player sacrifices a creature with converted mana cost 3 or less. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you have more cards in hand than each opponent, you may return Exile into Darkness from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh, wow. Yeah, not the card I was thinking of at all. This card's sweet. Good answer.
Yeah, this is like a... I don't know, like... Zombie's hands coming up from a pit or something.
Yeah, for sure. I was way off. So, all right. So back to the task at hand, talking about the Pro Tour. So you make it through, you get the reverse sweep, you get into the finals, and you know at that point you're playing against Lantern. Going into that matchup, is there a party that's like, I can win this? Or are you pretty much like, it is almost impossible for me to win this because 20 of my removal spells are dead cards?
No, I thought I could win, actually. And it just, my opening hands were not very good, and it's possibly that I should have mulliganed even lower than I did. I think I went down to like 6 and 5 in the first two games, and maybe I should have kept going. I don't know. But certainly the post-board games are winnable, and if I had like a little bit extra help, like maybe some engineered explosives or something, I think I would have had more of a fighting chance. But game three was close-ish. It was just like, I need to keep him off blue mana, because he had a Whirr stuck in his hand, and then I just need to find like another discard spell or something, and I just like couldn't keep the disruption going, and eventually he, you know, found a land and got to Gas Wurr and just started putting me away from there. So I think game three was pretty close. But yeah, the first two games were just kind of a bloodbath.
Because you pretty much need to have disruption to get Ensnaring Bridge or Wurr out of his opener, right? That's like the trick.
Yeah, I mean, if I had like a Kolaghan's Command in my opening hand, then cool. I think I also could have maybe played, maybe not the entire match, but like certain spots differently where it's just like maybe I'm supposed to like sandbag all of my fetches and all of my Faithless Lootings and just like save it up for a big turn to try and like break through his lock. But I don't know. It's tough.
Do you think that deck's a problem in Modern, or do you think it's totally fine?
I think it's very unfun. I mean, there are people like Canister, BBD, Sam Black, certainly Luis Salvato too, who play the deck at a reasonable enough pace that it's not super offensive, you know? And then if people are in my spot and they know that they're 0% to win and they can just concede, then cool. But it's kind of a big ask for people to know that stuff, like both like how to play their deck quickly and efficiently and how to know like when you're just like completely locked out by this prison deck. So
will Jace fit into that deck?
You could play Jace, but Zach, I think for the most part, things like Tezzeret are just doing what you want to do, but better.
Yes, right. Zach Elsick posted today being like, and I think it was a tweet from a while ago, but he like found it and retweeted it. Basically, this is my thoughts on if Jace is playable in Lantern. The answer is basically just like Tezzeret is better in every way.
Right. Like, yeah, makes sense.
It's just like at best you draw two cards and maybe you're fate-sealing your opponent, but you're already doing that in the deck, in a deck that's trying to do that. So then it's just why not play a thing that just pound for pound does a lot more damage with Tezzeret, who does, you know, when he ultimates, you win.
Yeah, totally fair. So that matchup ends. Now you look back and you look at Modern, and before obviously Jace and Bloodbraid get into the format, did you think it was truly the healthiest format? Like a lot of people have said it's the best that it's ever been. It's the greatest format of all time. Would you have shared that sentiment?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Modern was really good like 5 or 6 months ago, like when Death Shadow started tapering off a little bit and people started figuring out ways to beat it. And this Pro Tour was even better than that. I mean, like the top eight had what, 7 different decks, just like 2 copies of humans.
Yep.
And a bunch of weird stuff too. Like blue red pyromancer, the Mardu deck is kind of off the beaten path, Lantern wins.
Hollow one.
Reed's playing Hollow one. Reed's playing unplayable Abzan. Like this format's awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's so super great.
I don't know if these 4 drops are gonna ruin Modern. I think it's gonna like kind of be bad in the short term when everyone's like maybe playing Jace and trying to figure out exactly what they can do with it. But once it settles down again, I think it's just going to go right back to it being awesome again.
You're going to have the thing that like happens when a new card like Jace gets printed. It's like, oh, every player is playing him that had copies. And I would say much more than half doesn't know how to. And Jace is a card that makes turns last longer. So grind.
Yeah, it's going to be grindy.
So a question that I do have is now that Jace and Bloodbraid Bailiff are unbanned, how does your deck choice change? What cards would you play differently? Are there cards that you would play that you wouldn't have previously now that it's in the format? And or do you keep with Mardu or do you move towards a different color combo?
I certainly want to keep trying this deck because I liked it a lot. And that not all of that was necessarily related to me doing well, but I would likely look at playing a second copy of Dreadbore because I would assume that there are going to be a lot of Jaces. You already have some Lightning Bolts to deal with it in game one, but like post-board, you're probably going to want to take out some of those and just have things like Dreadbore to clean it up. And if people are playing Jund with like K-Command and Bloodbraid Elf, I think those games would be really fun. Like they're going to be really grindy, but I do think that Bedlam Reveler can hang. So yeah. I don't know. I don't think too much really changes quite yet. Maybe if Jace is actually good, then the metagame shifts. People play more aggro, more combo, and then, you know, you can tune your Mardu or Jund deck appropriately.
Yeah, I mean, the deck obviously has legs. I mean, you know, it didn't top 8 the Grand Prix this weekend, but it did get 9th and 10th place. We're both Mardu Pyromancer. So, like, obviously the deck is super powerful, and, like, a lot of what this deck is doing classically is powerful against Jace or other Planeswalkers or even Bloodbraid Elf, which is just like tokens, a lot of value, plays out of your graveyard, and anything with 3 power or more.
So yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up. We are going to bid you adieu and thank you, and then we'll, you know, finish up here and cover the Toronto results. But thank you so much for coming on the show again. It's been awesome to talk to you. Congratulations on another incredible showing, And yeah, man, like just keep it up. Keep living the dream, keep brewing incredible stuff and putting up results with it. And you know, I really hope you do in fact get to win with the card you mentioned.
And once and once again, where is the best place for people to find you on the internet and such?
I'm on Twitter all the time, basically, at G3RRYT.
Perfect. And you can find the link to that in our episode description. You also are on the GAM podcast, correct?
Yep. At the GAM podcast on Twitter. Also, we basically do an episode, sometimes standard, sometimes modern, just depending on what tournaments are coming up, like almost every week, unless one of us is traveling.
Perfect.
Very cool, man.
And your list is online. We'll also have that on the dropdown at collected.company. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll talk to you next time we have you on the podcast, which hopefully is soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. Once again, thank you, Jerry, for coming on. It was awesome having you. He ran out of time, but we didn't. So we're going to talk about the Grand Prix Toronto from this point on in the episode. So Grand Prix Toronto was the second modern tournament in a week.
Yeah.
Sick. A lot of modern for us. Plus, some bannings was crazy. Now, what's really interesting about this is looking at this, and the conversation I want to have is not only how exciting this is and the fact that Boggles won with multiple ley lines in the main deck, which I think is super sick. And finally, Noggles are on top again. Blue, red, horse people
Noggles.
For the win. This is Boggles. You know, we did still the number one blue green card is still a Boggle.
It is. It's a great card.
Yeah.
It's very
so
powerful.
We'll go through the top eight of this, but I also really want to talk about how does this top eight match against, and we can even go a little deeper, but how do these decks match up against the unbanned cards, and what does Bloodbraid Elf or Jace really do to this format, and would it have made a difference for either of those cards to be legal in this top eight? The top eight, so for those who don't know, is Boggles by Dan Ward, won the whole thing. Second place was Burn, piloted by John Stern. Jeskai Control by Luke Purcell got third place. Grishel Brandt, one of my faves, Jonathan Zhang. Elves, Bertrand Joseph Pear. I'm going to say some of these names wrong eventually. It's just an eventual disaster. Traverse Shadow by Alessandro Pogorzelski. Hopefully got that one right. Affinity in seventh by Benjamin Reagan. And Burn, Chris Dockrell.
I may have beaten, I know for a fact that I beat Dan Ward at a PTQ a few years ago. I recognize this picture. He was playing Goblins in Modern. Okay. I don't remember what deck I was playing. It feels like it was probably like my mill deck or something. I don't quite remember, but it was sick. Congratulations, Dan Ward.
Subtle brags. Thank you for that. The number one played card in the tournament was Lightning Bolt.
Yeah.
Number two was Collective Brutality. Number three was Path to Exile. Number four was Faithless Looting. First time in this top five. Number five was Thoughtseize. Six, Ancient Stirring. Seven, Relic of Progenitus. Eight, Inquisition of Kozilek. Nine was Lightning Helix. And 10 was Blood Moon.
Lots and lots and lots of interaction.
Lots and lots of one drops.
Yeah, I mean,
surprising no one.
It's like I said, when you're talking to Jerry, it's like one drops, big surprise. They just keep getting better.
Yeah, so the one thing I will say about this tournament is I don't think any of these decks are bad against Jace or Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, Jeskai Control would probably be playing it, but Burn is good against both of those cards. Boggles is good against both of those cards. Boggles playing Leyline in the main. How does Liliana? You can't.
I know.
Discard.
That was the sickest thing I noticed about Dan's list. I loved to see that. The three copies of Leyline of Sanctity in the main deck. That's a pretty
really
savage meta call.
Yeah. You like thinking about it, it's probably just the correct call forever. Like the cards that Boggles has a problem with are
getting your only creature Thoughtseize on turn one
or Edicts, and both of those target a player. So if they can't do either of those things, you just outright win. And then against Burn and other things, it's just sweet to have that out. Like
right, Scapeshift you don't lose to.
Right, there's just like weird decks that it just wins, and then there's against Jund and other decks it's just good. Now I think this is worse than it would have been moving forward because stuff like Maelstrom Pulse has gotten a lot better with Jace being printed. Because Jund is going to see more play and because Jund is going to opt into Maelstrom Pulses over something like necessarily a Terminate or a Fatal Push or Abrupt Decay to deal with Jace, the Leyline plan becomes worse.
Do you know what is good against the Noggles deck that Jace makes good?
Noggles? I do know what's good against the Noggles deck. It's anything that kills a 2/2 horse person.
Terminus. Terminus is very good against them. And that,
that's true.
And that is good with Chase.
That was the one conversation when we were talking with Jerry on Miracles and Terminus specifically, is that I do think Terminus has a chance to see more play than it currently does, which is zero.
Yep.
So I think it will definitely go up in play. I do agree that Supreme Verdict is better most of the time, but Terminus does have value and stuff, especially against like weird second tier stuff like Boggles.
Yeah.
Yep.
So let's talk about some of the other decks in the top eight. You have Jonathan Zhang playing Grishelbrand. Yep. Look at that, Grand Prix top eight with Grishelbrand. This is a deck that's been on the radar for such a long time. Everybody kind of knew this was a deck. It's a good deck. I mean, he's playing Night's Whisper in the main. I think that's pretty sweet. For those that don't remember how this deck works, you basically use Gloria's Vengeance to get, what's his name, Grishelbrand into play. You draw a bunch of cards. You then exile a 15 drop to Worldspine Worm to gain a bunch of life, to draw a bunch more cards. And then you use your Simeon Spirit Guides to whatever, like looting and cast another.
You use Simeon Spirit Guides to be able to possibly get Grishelbrand into play on turn one. And then with that, you're able to draw 14 cards. And then hopefully out of those 14 cards is a Nourishing Shoal and a World Spine Worm or a Bergamos, which lets you exile that, drawing an additional 14 cards off of that. By that point, you should be able to get enough additional Simeon Spirit Guides and a Faithless Looting to be able to discard a Bergamos and cast a Goro's Vengeance. And using that, you can now discard all the cards in your deck, all the lands you drew off of the Grishelbrand triggers to just do a bunch of damage and kill your opponent.
And look at that. Just another deck playing Blackleaf Cliffs in the main. This card is now $40.
That doesn't surprise me. You know what's crazy?
What?
Yeah, that is true. You're right.
Blackleaf Cliffs Black is Cliffs. $40.
Yep. Fastlands need reprinting. Here's the thing that is more interesting to me. Faithless Looting is quickly becoming one of the most defining cards of Modern.
Faithless Looting?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great card.
But it wasn't a month ago. Like a month ago, if I was to tell you what card was going to be so defining, Faithless Looting would not be on anyone's list. But now, Grishelbrand, the two Mardu Pyromancer decks, obviously Hollow Vine decks, like all of these decks are very much leaning on this card. I'm surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if this card sees more and more play as time goes forward.
Do you think it gets expensive?
No, it's been reprinted into the ground.
Yeah, I think
it's like in like a dual deck. It's like been in a comic book promo. It's like everywhere.
It's worth 60 cents.
Yeah. But I do think decks like Jund might start looking at this card to play a card that's decent.
Makes sense. You had two copies of Burn in the top eight. Both of them are pretty standard. The one difference between the two is that the list played by John Stern is playing a single copy of Vexing Devil in the main. One of the things with the Burn deck that we've seen a lot of recently is that they all play four Inspiring Vantage now. So they're all... their mana bases are a little less painful than they used to be. They're still splashing for Revelry in the sideboard usually, so there's usually still a Stomping Ground, but the four Vantage in the main is very consistent now, and a lot of them just don't want to take as much damage.
Yep. Beyond that, we have...
Traverse Shadow, piloted by Alessandro Pogorzelski. Shadow.
I did a better job saying his name than you did.
So this is another, this is just like another one of your four color shadow decks that's playing.
That's probably better than it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's like what I think we talked about this on the show, but like it's doing what the other one was. It's doing what the old shadow deck it did, the old Jund one.
Sure.
With Traverse and the what's it called? The Artifact Mistress Bauble. But it's also playing the blue stuff that makes the other deck better. So you have like multiple copies of Stubborn Denial. You know, you have three Denial, two Teamer Battle Rage. It just trims a little bit on your copies of what you're playing.
The thing with Death Shadow is that you want your health total to be low. So splashing colors, the main cost of being greedy with your mana base.
Yeah.
News to everyone, it's not Blood Moon, it's your life total. And Deathrite Shaman decks take advantage of that. They want their life total to be low.
It's also interesting that this deck is playing... it's not playing any copies of Thoughtscour, and it's playing four Tarmogoyf. So it doesn't play the Delve package. It's not playing like anywhere near as much of the Gurmag Angler, Tassiger, Thoughtscour stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the biggest difference about the way this deck's built.
Sure, it's going for more just having a static graveyard and having your opponent have a graveyard than just having a graveyard yourself.
Benjamin Reagan played a classic version of Affinity. Nothing in here really jumps out.
The one thing I do want to say about Affinity is moving forward, people should really be playing Etch Champions more. Like, because of Jace and because of just how good Jund decks are going to be, and that's the deck that Affinity can have a problem with, Etch Champion becomes your new best friend.
Yeah, it's very good. Bertrand Joseph Pear is playing elves. But interestingly enough about this elves deck, there is not a copy of what's his name? Creator of Behemoth. It's playing a much straighter.
Well, this is they haven't been playing Greater of Behemoth since Vizier of Remedies came out. So they've been moving much closer to a go infinite with Azuri Renegade Leader.
Just attack with everything.
Just because you can cord for everything. It's another cord deck. Your deck is just better off going off of the infinite plan that all your cards kind of work together than trying to get this one card that if you get into your hand early, it's just not going to do anything.
Interesting. Okay, so I haven't paid as close of attention to the Elves deck. So, yeah. I mean, it's all four ofs in the main other than three Nettle Sentinel, one Rex Sage, a Selfless Spirit, and a Vizier. And then it's got four of each of your engine cards, yep. Like Cord and Company, and otherwise just
a bunch of Cord targets and your cards that you want.
Or Horizon Canopy. You know what's funny? They reprinted Horizon Canopy, and I had bought my couple over the summer, and I paid like 60 for each, the old printing. What are you laughing about?
It's the sad song from Charlie Brown.
I don't feel that sad about it anymore because, first of all, this is one of the craziest examples of this I've seen. I have not seen this before, but if you go look at the price of Horizon Canopy from Future Sight, it's dropped a little, but it's still $53, whereas the other one is $33. The old printing is worth $20 more.
That happens a lot. Like if you look at the difference between Shocklands from Ravnica versus Return to Ravnica, the price is pretty significant. Like that's also, I think, a little bit of dealers doing that on purpose.
Right.
Like Star City Games can keep those old ones higher because it makes them collectible, and collectible, like for people that collect things, then maybe we'll buy them at a premium, but everyone who needs it will just buy the cheap ones.
Well, what's interesting about it is that
so you keep it from losing value on your list price.
Vintage Masters or Iconic Masters is very recent, and this is the price we're at after the reprinting in Iconic Masters, but currently you have four copies of Horizon Canopy being played in humans. You have it in the GP winning deck, Boggles, and now you're seeing four of copies in Elves. I think Horizon Canopy is going to go back up. I think that card's going to continue to be a heavily sought after land.
Yeah, I agree.
I was surprised to see how.
Well, I mean, it was in two of the top eight as a four of.
Yeah,
it's in Boggles too. Yeah,
and it was in both copies of humans.
You know, no one ever got the prize for the Noggles contest.
Nobody could make it.
No one was able to win at FNM or 5-0 a modern daily with a deck with at least two Noggles in it.
Luke Purcell is playing Jaceless Jeskai Control, soon to add Jace.
I don't know if that's true. So, like, the thing you have to look at here is these are the Lightning Helix Lightning Bolt decks, and yeah, I could see them playing one or two Jaces, like maybe over a Cryptic Command. This is a deck that's playing Sphinx's Revelation. If you're playing Sphinx, you can play Jace. But, like, the tempo-style Jace decks aren't going to want at least four of them. I don't see them playing four Jace. I see Sphinx's Revelation getting cut for Jace and maybe one other card in here. So you get two of them. Maybe a search for Azcanta. So you go down to one search. But like four of in this deck seems not what it's trying to do, especially because like this is much more of an aggressive deck and Jace isn't aggressive. It's kind of going on the opposite plan.
Interesting. So this, but this deck is pretty much what we've seen. It's got the one Gideon Allies Zendikar, two search for Azcantos, two Verdict, and then the rest of the spell count is all like what we've seen: three Logic Knot, Sphinx Rev, and a Secure the Wastes. So
I love just posting. Everyone's there's like regularly in the Facebook group. There's a thread be like, which counter spell is going to be the best one in Modern, or when are they going to reprint counter spell, or if you could print a card, what text would it be that would be fair for Modern? But is a counter spell like counter spell? And I just always post a picture of Logic Knot.
It's a sick card.
It's really good. It does everything what people want.
I posted that question the other day and people like it got like a lot of interaction. Yeah. Like hundreds of comments.
Memory Lapse is the only fair card on those four lists.
People like the card Memory Lapse. It was a big conversation. But Brandon S. Russell, who if you're hearing this, big shout out, longtime listener of the Anchor Show, he called in and I shared his call on Anchor. He was saying that it's like Memory Lapse is very, very similar to Delay in a lot of ways. It's just that one creates the immediate tempo of putting it on the top of their library and kind of time walking their next draw step, whereas the other is an actual hard counter if you can close the game out in the next three turns.
Sure.
And it's interesting, Delay sees almost no play, which means if Memory Lapse was legal, I wonder how much play it would see, because Remand is just better, I'm pretty sure, in almost every sense.
I agree. That was my argument on the thread, was just like Memory Lapse is the only fair card here to print, actually, and it's worse than Remand. But if I had to pick a next level one, I would pick Force of Will now over Days. Well, now that Jace exists, different conversation.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Before Jace was unbanned, my answer was Force of Will is better than Days or basic Counterspell. I think Force of Will would be less damaging to Modern than Counterspell would.
I think that if you were to print Memory Lapse, the best use of it would be in these decks like we just looked at, this Jeskai deck, as like a one or two of with Snapcaster, so that you could basically, depending on what situation the game was in at a certain point, you could decide which one to flash back. That early in the game, it's fine to create tempo and hit your land drops. That late in the game, if you're trying to like bust through a Snapcaster Mage and like not get thwarted,
sure,
that you would be able to like flash back, Memory Lapse, cut off their next draw, close out the game. Like that's to me.
Agreed.
That's like what seems to make sense. Anyway, I think that's pretty much going to wrap us up, because that is the top eight from the pro, from the GP. And
so we talked about it a little with Jerry, and before we wrap up the episode, obviously the bannings is the biggest news of the day, so we should wrap up a little bit of that conversation. What deck are you most excited to play with those two cards? And
there's Miracles. That's like interesting. I don't think traditional Miracles necessarily, but the idea of some sort of Miracles deck I think is really cool. I am somebody who for the longest time has tried to make Survivor of the Unseen work. And so when they printed Riverwise Augur, I thought that was interesting. There's a lot of different cards that are like...
You hated on that card so hard when I brought it up.
Yeah, I was convinced afterwards. there's like a lot of different cards and strategies over the last little while that I have tried building where you needed to be able to set the top of your library. And so I've... Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like Nissa getting a Superior into play, or like Cloud Form getting, you know, something awesome on the battlefield. And it's been really difficult to have any consistent way of doing something like that. So I think the combination of Nissa and Jace together in some sort of deck that you could build that was going to try to set the top of your library to take full advantage, that seems really cool to
me. Is Bloodbraid Elf better than Collected Company necessarily in Sabria Burning Cocoa?
Is Bloodbraid Elf better than Collected Company? No, because
it removes a lot of your creature restrictions that you had before.
It's a 4-drop, so it doesn't play well with Aether Vial on the deck, so you're going to have to cast it. Getting to 4 land is fine, and you can do it for Collected Company, but like if what you're getting is you flip a Path to Exile or you like flip a Burning Tree Emissary, it's like not that good, whereas Collected Company,
you have a decision.
Almost
and you get
always
things.
Gets 10 power.
Okay.
So I think the way that it played in the end.
Sure. I think, I mean, like, obviously I already have Jund and Blue-White Control built sitting next to me as we sit right here, actually, and I'm going to slide them into those decks immediately. The deck that I don't have built already that I'm going to try out the most, that I'm most excited about, is this teamer list with Ancestral Visions. Like, cascading into Ancestral Visions
sounds sick.
Very, very, very sweet.
I agree.
Now that we've talked today as a final wrap-up, where do you stand on, you know, a significant amount of the internet is, oh God, the sky is falling, Jace is unbanned, oh, woe is us, how dare Wizards put upon us these painful moments of our lives, blah, 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 blah. Do you actually think either of these cards are going to be that problematic for the format?
As I said with Jerry, Bloodbraid Elf, no, not even close. I thought that could have been unbanned a year ago. Jace, I'll wait and see. A lot of smart people are keeping cool heads, and I think that the sky is falling mentality is ridiculous. But best case scenario, I'm saying cautiously optimistic here, because like it's going to be a slow card that makes better players better, and like it will make good players great, and it'll make average players make mistakes. And anytime you put this is the kind of card that will give a good player an edge, and that to me is fun. And I don't think it'll ruin the format, but
like, could this be the great unifier between the pro community and the rest of Magic community in making Modern the best format ever? If Jace ends up being fair, powerful, but only in the hands of skilled players, but then gives skilled players an edge that they probably are looking for, but still allows people to punish them using Affinity or other decks that kind of can beat them, isn't that probably a better situation than we were currently?
I mean, it sounds positive. I don't know if that what you just said makes any sense in terms of the reality of it. I don't know if like...
That's what you just said. I mean, the idea is new players or good players have a deck that they can reliably play that capitalize on their skill level to have a better percentage against the field versus before that didn't really exist. They had to pick a deck that gave them a decent percentage, but then had to get lucky and not get matched up against opponents that this is how they feel. This is their complaint regularly is, I don't want to be paired against random decks that auto lose for me, and that's my problem with Modern. And Jace allows them to have a more rounded game plan against decks like that.
It's just so hard to say, man. I think that the power level of this card is so high that I can see the opportunity for this to really make the best players shine. I can also see this just being a problem card where like you said on the show, it's like slow, people are going to dirtle, brainstorming every turn is so dirtly, and people do it.
Well, people are already lantering. People are already dirtling and other decks. I mean, and we were pretty much confident that Lantern did not need to get banned as our final statement last week. So why is Jace... I don't think Jace is any dirtlier than Lantern is.
If Jace is fair and it's just a fun card to have around and it doesn't become just like the auto have to play card, I think it's going to be awesome because I love this card and it's very powerful and it's fun. It'll be fun to play with Jace again. Those are my final thoughts. I think we should probably wrap it up. So we are going to be in New York for a week.
Yep, we have an episode coming out next week.
It's a cool episode. It's a cool episode.
We are at Twitter. We are at The MMCast. I am at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
You can find us at Facebook. You can find us on Instagram, all at The MMCast. Facebook, you also search the Masters of Modern official Facebook group. It's the best group to talk about Magic. We have a Patreon. Go donate it to it. If you go to a Target and take a picture of yourself with an ice hoop or a drop-top ball or a mini drop-top ball, and you buy one and you take a picture of yourself with it and you post it online and tag us and tag at Kes Play on Instagram, you get in the running to win free Modern Masters set packs. Not original one, probably Modern Masters 3. So we'll be sending those out as different awards. Those are the toys I made at Kes. My company, Kes. You can also go to Kes.co right now to check out what we make. There's also Super Party Battle out there, which is the game we made, which is really like Magic, and you guys should definitely check it out. You can find where to buy it there. And make sure to check out the Anchor Station, where we record 10 minutes of Magic every day.
Called 10 Minutes of Modern. Full disclosure, I found one of those packs upstairs in a box. I opened it. I couldn't help myself.
Well, I have a whole box in my apartment.
I know. I opened one. There was an All Is Dust in there, so it was a good open.
Okay. Congratulations.
It's like a $25
card. You stole that from a person going to buy a drop-top ball at
Target. It's just owned by the podcast now.
Yeah.
Did you have a full set of All Is Dusts?
No.
Well, there you go. Now you have one. You paid
Do
for it.
Do I need
them? Oh, I guess the podcast paid for it. Yeah. That was half mine. That is half mine.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
You can have it.
It's a great way to end the podcast.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye,
we love
guys.
You. Thank you, Jerry, for coming on. It was great. We'll see everyone next week.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.